got delayed. Well, I'm very pleased indeed to welcome Dr. Angelica Malinoff from the School of Oriental and African Studies. She has done work in Orissa on Vaishnava traditions, and she's also written an important book on the Bhagavad Gita, relating it to kingship. And it's an angle that no one's ever looked at the text from that angle before. And so it's really, and I'm looking forward to the English version of that coming out in the not too distant future. So I'll pass it over to you. If you could read the title of your paper too, Sylvia, and we'll have about an hour's session.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me, and I'm pleased to be here this afternoon. And I'm going to talk about a topic related to the Chaitanya tradition, but in terms of a case study concerning a topic of wider interest of Hindu studies. The paper is titled Interconnecting Parallel Times, Notions of Time in the Chaitanya Tradition of Hinduism. I first give you some more general introduction. Why parallel times? What does it mean? And then I proceed to discuss, first of all, Eliade's, Mircea Eliade's very important interpretation of Hindu time as cyclical time. And then I proceed to one text of the Chaitanya tradition. In many religious traditions, time is perceived and interpreted in relation to a belief in a transcendent realm of timelessness or the eternal presence of a divine being. Religions claim that there is another sphere of existence beyond those structures by our social time. Furthermore, religious teachers maintain that this sphere of timelessness is the ultimate cause of time and gives meaning to all its manifestations. However, this function of a time-transcending sphere, that it confers meaning on temporality, only becomes operative when it is related to the existence and movement of social time. Thus, in many religions, the revelation of a time-transcending realm takes place in time and may be regarded as a singular and even historically recorded event. In any case, for the religion's followers, the revelation of their teaching is a unique event that serves as a point of departure for traveling on the path that ultimately leads out of time and into the transcendent sphere. This implies that the individual adept must be able to cope with the transitions between the temporal framework of daily life and the realms of timelessness that one may reach through religious practice. Living in relation to transcendence, while still being able to manage one's daily life, plays an important role in the self-perception of members of religious communities. The ability to coordinate these parallel times on both conceptual and practical levels and to be in control of the transitions, is what distinguishes a follower. Religious practice and doctrine are concerned about establishing, organizing, and explaining these transitions. Therefore, notions of time in religious tradition are multi-layered. However, when it comes to discussing notions of time in Hinduism, such distinctions are rarely drawn. One reason for this lies in the readily maintained assertion that Hindu religions generally use cyclical time. Its epitome is seen in the Puranic doctrine of repeated creations and destructions of the world that take place in cosmic eras. The endless repetition implied in Hindu cosmic time has often been regarded as mirroring the endless cycle of death and rebirth, which stimulates the desire to escape what is described as the wheel of existence. This interpretation had an influential advocate in Mircea Eliade, the famous phenomenologist of religion, and this interpretation was supported by those who see in the absence of history and historiography a characteristic feature of ancient Indian civilization. Well, the latter no longer seems to be taken for granted, and historians by now regard the combination of cyclical and linear notions of time as a special feature of Quranic texts and later dynastic accounts. Yet, Iliada's interpretation is still widely applied to Hindu religious traditions and therefore calls for an examination. Therefore, I shall at first ask how to understand cyclical time and discuss Iliada's interpretation. I will propose a distinction, a conceptual distinction, which will be applied then in the analysis of a text of the Chaitanya tradition. So maybe I can... No, I have skipped this. Mircea Eliade has dealt with notions of time in ancient cultures in a comparative perspective in several publications. Fundamental here is his monograph The Myth of Eternal Return, published in 1949, which was followed by a major article on time and eternity in India. In these works, he contrasts the linear historical time of Western culture with the concept of cyclical time in archaic societies like the Indian. In these societies, the archaic ones, he argues the linear passage of time was felt to be unpleasant. As a result, attempts were made to replace this idea by transforming historical events into myth, that is, into repetitions of something that has already happened. I quote, "In the traditional societies, men endeavor consciously to abolish time, to efface past. Myth tears man away from his own time, from his individual chronological time," unquote. This endeavor resulted in the invention of the widespread myth of a primordial time of creation, which Iliade calls illu tempus, that very time of beginning. According to this myth, the time of creation is not seen as a unique event, but as recurrent. Consequently, quote, "the life of archaic men, although it takes place in time, does not bear the burden of time." This notion also implies implies the idea that time may be regenerated, a task that in many societies is accorded to rituals. In these contexts also arises the notion of an eternal return and the image of the wheel of time, as they both signify regeneration brought about by repetition. According to Iliade, the notion of cyclical time documents the resistance of ancient society to history. However, when one tries to make out what precisely is meant by cyclical time, Iliade's interpretation becomes ambiguous, because two different notions are referred to as cyclical time. First, the repetition of the act of creation, or rather its periodic recurrence, and secondly, the cyclical return of the past. So maybe I can draw your attention to the first page, which is this one, two different notions connected with cyclical time. I will now try to explain the distinction which I here argue. So first of all, these two notions, recurrence and cyclical, and cyclicity as I call them, have not the same implications. Repetition in the sense of periodic recurrence and the return of the past are not the same, and they do not necessarily imply any cyclicity. On the contrary, in order to be distinguishable, the phenomena of repetition and periodic recurrence must be set in a sequence, allowing them to be identified and counted. Recurrence thus implies some sort of linear or at least index sequence. The presence of a repetition can only be noted if the first occurrence of an event can be distinguished from its repetition. Only if one knows, for instance, of two New Year's celebrations, it does make sense to say that the New Year is being celebrated again. Thus, the fact that something is happening again at a certain point of time neither necessarily nor logically implies any cyclical movement. Recurrence does not imply the identity of what recurs, but a distinction between the recurrent events, which makes it possible to identify them as a sequence of countable repetitions. For instance, although we each year find the 30 days of June listed in the calendar, it is not just the same June, and we would not call this recurrence of June cyclic time. Only when it comes to the second notion, the cyclic return of the past, is time indeed conceived as moving in circles, because identical actions and events will take place again and again. With respect to the sameness implied in the notion of eternal return, Iliade distinguishes two aspects. First, repetition of identical actions, for example, the act of creation, and secondly, what he calls archetypal sameness. This is something like recurrent events like harvest, the birth of the hero. This all would be archetypal sameness, not identity. However, according to Iliade, the combination of both aspects in India results in the annihilation of the individual characteristics of an event, which would make them unique and potentially historically. The past is in India just a prefiguration of the future. No event is irreversible and no transition is final. In a sense, he says, it is even possible to say that nothing new ever happens in the world. Unquote. In this situation, it is neither necessary nor desirable to record the return of the past chronologically, because chronology would not mark any difference. Iliade draws on Puranic texts in order to demonstrate that Indian cosmic time generally corresponds to this understanding of cyclicity as a return of the past. Thus, I feel, unfortunately, Iliade confounds the two notions of recurrence and cyclicity when he classifies, in the end, Indian cosmic time generally as cyclic. A reduction of complexity, as I will try to show. I think, in order to get hold of this complexity, it is necessary to keep to the distinction between recurrence and cyclicity I have just proposed. Again, while recurrence of time units implies counting and sequence, cyclicity entails the eternal return of the same. We will find that both notions are used in Hindu religious contexts. So now let me turn to a case study. I shall like to now analyze the interconnection between recurrence and cyclicity, or to say it differently, between different time phrases used in the Chaitanya tradition, the so-called Madhva Gaurishwara Sampradaya, sometimes also Gaudiya Sampradaya. As the textual basis, I shall use the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the sacred biography of Chaitanya, as you, I think, all know, a canonic and widely used text, which is also regularly taught in the major monastic communities of the Sampradaya, as I'm studying them in Orissa. First, I shall consider how the appearance of Chaitanya is placed within the framework of Indian cosmic time. That is, I asked, how is Chaitanya dated? The Chaitanya Charitamrita is, according to Dimmitt and Stewart, has been completed between 1600 and 1612, and as Stewart has shown, the text acquired the important position because it offers synthesis of divergent views on Chaitanya offered in other texts. One element in the synthesis is the acceptance of the doctrine that Chaitanya should be regarded as a joint incarnation of both Lord Krishna and his divine consort, the goddess Radha. In explaining this doctrine, The text draws on the following time frames, each belonging to a different sphere of existence. And maybe we can take this now, this notions of time used in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. First of all, we are dealing with a transcosmic, cyclical time. This would be cyclical time in the precise sense I introduced it to you. In Krishna's eternal heaven, Goloka. Second, we are dealing with what I would call common Indian cosmic time. This is the time which is referred to by dealing with days of Brahma, the so-called Manvantaras, and then Yugas. This common cosmic time corresponds to the world called Brahma Loka. This, I think you are all familiar with the ancient Indian cosmography. And within this cosmic time, we have the Yuga sequence, which is special because it is the time which is only valid for India, for Bharata Varsha, as a cosmic region in contrast to other cosmic regions. And now then, within this Yuga sequence, the Chaitanya Charitamrita uses a specific era, the Shaka era, to then date Chaitanya precisely. So we have a kind of hierarchy or a telescoping into the Shaka era coming from the Brahma days. And what I'm now going to do is to argue that the Brahma days are not to be regarded as cyclical time, although we read this all over again. So, first of all, the relationship between Lord Krishna and Chaitanya, because I don't need to explain this, I've already said it, he's dealt with as an avatar, as a descent of Krishna. So, his descent is first of all established by drawing on the framework of common cosmic time. We are dealing now with the days of Brahma. This is the framework used in most texts for locating the different descents, the avatars of Hindu gods and goddesses. However, in order to date Krishna's descent as Chaitanya, this must be distinguished from his previous descent as Krishna. And such a distinction is possible because Krishna's descents are recorded according to cosmic time units as they operate in Bharatavarsha in India, which is the region of the god's appearance. This must be stressed because it often remains unnoticed that according to the cosmographic accounts in the epics and Puranas, the sequence of the four world ages, the Yugas, passes only in India in Bharatavarsha. It's only valid for Bharatavarsha. The other cosmic regions are described either as places characterized by the period of time that a migrating soul spends there in order to enjoy or to suffer the results of their karma, or they are regarded as spheres in which the condition of one of the yugas is preserved. Consequently, Bharatavarsha is defined as that cosmic region where people are responsible for their lives and determine their future by their deeds. Thus, Bharatavarsha, the land of the Yugas, if you want to say it like this, is the only place with a future where change and unexpected turns of events are possible. Descents of gods usually take place here because only here in India time does make a difference. This is also true for Krishna's descent as Chaitanya, in that it happens during a Kali Yuga, the age and time unit when he descended. The sequence of yugas is not a time cycle, but it's a sequence of time units which are counted, and such can be regarded as a time reckoning. It serves to record the internal history of India. Furthermore, from the perspective of the other cosmic spheres in which time is not reckoned in yugas, the yuga sequence in India is a parallel time to which the inhabitants of the other spheres are closely related. And this is why the gods in other spheres and also the god Krishna in the cosmic sphere observes time in Bharatavarsha running. Two chapters in the Chaitanya Charitamrita 1.3-4 are dedicated to explaining the date and motive of Chaitanya's appearance. At first, it is declared that although Krishna enjoys eternal pleasures in his heavenly sphere, he decides to descend again on Bharatavarsha and in the Kali Yuga out of compassion for those who miss him. Then, Krishna's previous appearance as Krishna is dated as follows, and maybe you can take the other, the shorter quote. I had it on transparency, so copied to this one. I quote, "The Satya Treta Dwapara Kali. I know these four ages, and these four ages are one Divya Yuga, one Heavenly Yuga. 71 of each of the four ages are one Manvantara." This you know, 71 yugas are Manvantara. "And there are 14 Manvantaras in one day of Brahma." You see here, they are all counted. Yeah? "This now is the seventh Manvantara named Vaivasvata. 27 4-H periods are within it. 28 4-H periods ago, at the end of the Dwapara age, Krishna appeared with his companions in Raja." So we have a very clear-cut sequence of dating established. In this passage, the life of Chaitanya is not dated by referring to a cyclical repetition of similar events as one might expect it, but by placing it in a sequence of time units that are counted and thus mark the irreversibility of time in India. The largest unit is the day of Brahma. This contains all the other units and qualities of times and encompasses all the spheres of the created cosmos, all the different continents. As a consequence, events happening in a Brahma day can be dated because they are reckoned by time units. By contrast, however, events in other days of Brahma are not recorded and dated because the number of days and night of Brahma are infinite. They are not numbered. Also, the corresponding creations and destructions of the world of Brahma are not counted because also it's an infinite number. Therefore, we do not know whether we are dealing with events in the 7th or 20th day of Brahma, and in fact, it does not matter, because we have no record nor sequence. This may indicate that Brahma days are identical, and that in any other day of Brahma, the same things just happen again. We don't know that, however, because even if it has no consequence for the perception of what happens now, and now it's always in this one very day of Brahma in which events are recorded. This is also true with regard to the phenomenon of return itself, because strictly speaking, this kind of repetition cannot be recorded, because the first occurrence of a day of Brahma ever cannot be distinguished from its repetition. We are just left with the Brahma day as the final unit. Although the infinite number, and I would argue the infinite number is the point and not any cyclicity, but because it's infinite, although the infinite number of Brahma days may suggest that we are dealing here with a rather open cosmic history that knows no beginning and no end, it actually results in a closure of the created world. In fact, we all have only access to the current time of a single, the running Brahma day. This closure stands in contrast with the effect that the phenomenon of the infinite number has in modern Western contexts, in which it's resulted in the notion of an openness and uncertainty about the past and future and the problem of unpredictable evolutions and lost histories. This is avoided in the case of Indian cosmic time, in that it indeed tones down the terror of history, as Heliade puts it, by making it clear that there's always only one history and that one always lives in only one time, that it counts, that is counted and which counts. So, events happening in the world and day of Brahma are unique because time units are counted. They are not regarded as repeatable events within a cyclical movement of time. Time moves in the passing of these time units indeed like a wheel, and we have also this image. However, it is a wheel that not just turns around itself and is otherwise at standstill, rather it moves like a wheel that with each revolution actually brings about a movement in space causing progress, pushing the wheel forward. Thus the cosmic wheel of time includes not only this revolution around the axis but also a sequential movement in space, forward movement. In consequence, in the wake of another descent as Chaitanya, the uniqueness of Krishna's past appearance is thus maintained in the following manner, just to summarize the quote against the background of these more theoretical considerations. First, Krishna's previous appearance in Raja, recorded in the Bhagavata Purana, is placed in the definite path of a previous yuga. That is, it is dated back to the Dvapara Yuga of the Yuga sequence of the seventh Manvantara. And this distinguishes this incarnation from Chaitanya's one, who lives in the 28th Kali Yuga of the seventh Manvantara. It's not just he was born in the Kali Yuga. You always read it. Chaitanya was born in the Kali Yuga. No, according to this text, it's the 28th Kali Yuga of the seventh Manvantara. Secondly, those descents, Krishna as Krishna and Krishna as Chaitanya, are declared to be unique within one day of Brahma, and now you know we have only one. I stress this point in order to make clear that we are dealing here with cosmic time in an Indian text in which events are depicted as non-repeatable. And therefore, more generally we can say, an avatara never appears twice in Bharatavasha in order to fulfill his task. At least I do not know of any text in which a story of a reappearance of an avatara is recounted, but maybe one of you knows one. I would be happy to know this. I haven't met any story dealing with the repeated appearance of an avatara. An avatara of one and the same God is different in different times and places, and because of the irreversible and non-repeatable character of the events here, divine interference and religious revelation can and must happen more than once. Therefore, religious truth, dharma, declines and may even be lost, only to be rediscovered and revealed again, but differently. Conversely, when avataras disappear from India, they are often transferred to other continents. They can still be reached, but they never return. Thus, Krishna can only appear once as Krishna. Otherwise, he has to appear in a different shape, under a different name, living a different time, life in a different time. I quote the Chaitanya Charitamrita on this point, quote, only once in a day of Brahma, Krishna, having descended, makes manifest Vihara, and this means appears as Krishna. Having established the uniqueness and nature of Krishna's descent in terms of cosmic time, the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita then places Chaitanya's birth in the temporal framework of the Shaka era, which is the current common era of the 28th Kali Yuga of the 7th Manvantara, not of another yuga. Quote, Sri Krishna Chaitanya descended as Navadvipa, and for 48 years his appearance was there. 1407 of the Shaka era witnessed his birth, and in 1455 he disappeared. Even the date of Krishna's descent into the bodies of Chaitanya's parents is placed in this chronology. And of course, then the astrological constellation is also described, that he was, of course, born when the sign was in Leo, in the lion, and during the full moon. So here we have precise dating relying on the actual social time running at that moment in India, but everything nicely telescoped down from the day of Brahma in order to have a very precise date. The combination of cosmic time, common Shaka era, and astrological qualifications of time in dating the appearance of Chaitanya causes no difficulties, it's no logical contradictions here, and there is no tension between cyclical or linear time, because everything has been put in a nice context and sequence. The irreversibility of time is not only acknowledged in regard to the date of divine interventions and manifestations, but also when Krishna Dasa Kaviraja considers Krishna's motives for descent. Two motives are given. First, we heard this, his compassion for the devotees. However, there's another motive which also confirms this kind of, I would say, historical dimension which is accorded to the history the God has with India as a place of descent. This motive, the second motive, is called the internal, so the more personal, if you want to say, motive. And this, in order to explain this, the text points to Krishna's previous descent, again, as Krishna in Raja, and this turns it into something like a personal history of the God. It is stated in the text that Krishna, before his descent, muses over the course of his past earthly sojourn, and in doing this he realizes that something is missing, that there is something left to know and to live. This can only be known when he again descends to Bharatavarsha as the only place where he can make this experience and where he can make a difference. Krishna decides to descend in order to fulfill this unfulfilled desire that arose in reflecting on the past, and he becomes embodied as Chaitanya because he reflects about the experience Radha might have had, an experience which he did not have, because only she has experienced the rapture of loving Krishna. Because while he only experienced how it feels to be loved and desires, now Krishna himself wants to become Radha, that is the subject and not only the object of love. Chaitanya Charitamrita quotes Krishna's thoughts, "My heart longs to gain the joy which the container, the subject of love, gains. But though I try eagerly, I cannot taste it. Indeed, how could I? If I could be the container of this love, I could experience the bliss of love." Thinking thus, Krishna remained full of desire, and therefore he descends and takes a male body, whose disposition, however, and state of being is female. And this is the very definition, the special mode of being of Chaitanya as the joint incarnation of these two divine beings. So I don't go further into the theological details of this interpretation. The only point I wanted to make clear is that the same kind of non-repetition character is accorded to the motives of Krishna's descent. Now I will deal with the last point, the transcosmic time and the cyclical repetition. Krishna appears as Chaitanya, but at the same time, and this is the divine ontology, he stays in the heavenly abode of Goloka. How is Krishna's eternal presence there connected with his temporary existence as an avatara? Well, as to be expected, it is stated that they both coexist and happen simultaneously. The presence of the eternal Goloka is the other the parallel time on which the life of Chaitanya and his followers is concentrated. Thus, on the one hand, a god on earth, Chaitanya, represents the continuous presence of the events going on in the transcendent realm. On the other hand, Chaitanya lives like a human devotee and can thus become a model of the relationship to the divine. Krishna's life cannot be understood without remembering the past history of Krishna, that is his sojourn in Raja, which is staged again and again in the heavenly region, but only at times in Chaitanya's life and actually here on earth. This connection of parallel time is established in the personality of Chaitanya himself. He himself interconnects these two dimensions of time. And quite aptly, he is even called a bridge, the Dharma bridge. Yeah, he is in a way connecting, but also separating these two realms of time. So he connects this, and in this way, he is a manifestation of Krishna's eternal presence in the temporal world. These appearances are then, in the next quote, and this will be then the final one, equated with the days and nights of Brahma, because Krishna's appearances on earth are as infinite. They are also not countable. Now we cannot count them, record them. We cannot say this is number one Chaitanya, number two Chaitanya. It's not possible because it's infinite. This is made very clear in another passage of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I just read it out, you can follow it. As many lilas there are every moment, he, Krishna, manifests progressively all these eternal lilas. Also, you can see here this progressively, this sequence again makes it very clear that there is a difference between these two spheres. Brahma worlds are infinite. There is no counting of them. And each lila is manifested in each Brahma world. All the shastras, all the texts speak of the eternal lila of Krishna. We cannot understand how can the lila be eternal. I give an example, then people will understand. The Krishna lila is eternal, and the proof of it is in the wheel of the planets. In the wheel of the planets, the sun travels night and day and crosses over the seven islands and seas and gradually returns. The seven islands and seas are, of course, the whole of the Indian cosmos. Thus, the circle of the Krishna Lila in the 14 Manvantara, it returns gradually, pervading the circle of Brahma worlds. 125 years was the manifest Lila of Krishna in Rajapura. The wheel of that Lila returns like a wheel of fire. Thus, all Lilas gradually take place in all the Brahma worlds. Thus, Krishna has eternal activities in Goloka, and he is progressively manifested in the Brahma world. And this is why Krishna may appear on earth time and again. However, the sun-like progression and the variety of his manifestations do not imply that the light, the sunlight, always reveals the same landscape. Again here, it is not time that moves like a wheel. Rather, it is the ever-present being, the God, who appears in the created world like the sun, which moves through the circle of the planets. This movement through fixed spatial boundaries measured in time units constitutes time. Thus again, while the movement through the circle can be counted, the number of circuits and circles cannot be counted. They are infinite. So not because of cyclical movement we don't have any records of the eternal lila, because of the infinite number. Chaitanya's appearance is just a moment in the progressive manifestation of Krishna in the worlds of Brahma. However, with regard to the current Kali Yuga, he opens up a unique path to that very region of Krishna. This path shows that sacred timelessness and profane time overlap, and this makes it possible to even participate in the eternal heavenly realm while being on earth, at least for certain moments. This implies that the eternity of this Krishna realm is not a state which is not structured by time. When we are dealing with the transcosmic time in heavenly world of Krishna, we are not dealing with the present, an ever-remaining present, a kind of stable, unchanging situation. Rather, time there consists of the incessant repetition of the chronology of past events. It is this eternity that can be regarded as cyclical time par excellence. This is the ewige Wiederkehr des Gleichen, the Nietzsche favorite line, the eternal return of the same events counted in the same time units enacted by the very same actors on the very same stage. And we all know what is enacted is this love story between Krishna and Radha. He is striving for. To experience the cyclical eternal return is the aim of religious practice, to participate in the cycle, not to escape from it. In this context, endless repetition is not equated with suffering and boredom, but rather with ecstasy brought about by intense repetition. I hope that the analysis of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and these rather theoretical considerations on time concepts has shown that the interpretation of the life of the founder in the interpretation of Chaitanya an important role is played by different notions of time, and especially of notions of time already current in the social cultural context in which the text and the tradition have emerged. The account of Krishna's life not only furnishes the ideal of successful religious life, the task of the hagiographical text, but also explains the temporal frameworks in which it is embedded. This serves as a stable point of orientation for the followers, irrespective of the actual situation they might find themselves in. The relative independence from the contingency of historical circumstances for religious practice results from the interpretation of a unique past, that is a past which is lost in time, as divine time. This means that the past is turned into an everlasting presence located in a transcosmic sphere that encompasses all other spheres of existence. The life of the charismatic teacher demonstrates how these parallel times can be connected. The case of the Chaitanya tradition shows that also in Hindu religious contexts, notions of time cannot be understood by applying the favorite distinction between linear and cyclical time without qualification. This distinction has long served to put linear time on the side of history and progress, epitomized by Western civilization, modern individuality, and Christianity as that, while cyclical time being placed on the side of mythology, symbolized by Indian civilization and especially by Hinduism. I think it's helpful to be precise about one's understanding of cyclical time and distinguish between cyclicity and recurrence. I hope I have convinced you a bit that this distinction helps us to analyze how different concepts of time are used in Hindu religious traditions. We have a rather complex situation in the Chaitanya tradition, where we on the one hand have a linear time sequence established in the yuga cycle, but also we come across a concept of cyclical time that closely matches the notion of the eternal return of the same. However, this time is not the epitome of cosmic time, but of divine time. It marks the presence of God. Therefore, cyclical repetition is not something one tries to leave. On the contrary, it is a time that one desires to enter in order to escape the fact that while being on earth, one is endlessly pushed forward into another day, another year, and another era. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We have 15 minutes or so for questions and discussion. I thought that was extremely interesting, drawing our attention to the cyclicity and the idea of recurrence. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking that cyclicity is, as you were saying, is about sameness, and recurrence is actually, you could gloss recurrence as non-identical repetition, which is perhaps linked in more with a ritual cycle. So I was wondering if you think that these considerations about time, which operate at a fairly abstract sort of level or a mythological narrative level, are actually related to some idea of a ritual repetition.
Or actually also a calendrical and then also ritual repetition.
Yes.
Because I think even in the older texts, now we have dealt with the text from the 16th, 17th century, but even in the older I would also dare to say, although you are hearing Vedic texts, we also have this combination. Also there we have the wheel of time with spokes, and all the yes. days of the year and the months of the year are inserted as spokes of the wheel, which is turning. But always the turning is also a forward movement, which is marked. The turning is marked by ritual moments. The recurrence would actually be marked or made in a way perceptible by these ritual markings. Not just by calendars, but these calendars are all ritual calendars, of course. But on the other hand, the wheel also has always to move forward, otherwise you could not count your lifetime, which is even very important in the Vedic texts. So I think we have in India this close connection between ritual time and this kind of recurrence and the invention of calendars. And the point or the problem is that this was somehow in a way obscured by Iliade's equation of myth and ritual, that he would say mythical time is the cyclical time, which is then regenerated through ritual. And in this way, you have cyclical time with the ritual cycle, which again is only reconfirming the cycle, but not in a way an organization of social life in which individual members are very well interested also to pass through different life cycles and stages. And although he has both, there is this distinction. In the end, he confounds it. And this has to do with his interest to have a strong contrast between Western monotheistic religions and archaic non-monotheistic religions. And he would say sequence in the real sense has to be related with monotheistic or related to monotheistic theologies, which we of course do not have in India. And so this is his basic presupposition, and many scholars have just agreed to this, or just they have accepted it because it was so neat. You can just say, and the Buddhists have it too, and the Jainists have it too. It's the Indian way. But even in, I think, in the Buddhist context, we have also different levels, and you have enormous effort is taken to count. And there is this awareness of the infinite number, which has, and this would also support your point with the ritual. When you would claim the infinite number of a certain event, then ritual, to insert a ritual would be very, very problematic or even impossible, because in order to perform a ritual, you need a frame. And so I would say the moment you have a ritual time, you have to have some non-identical repetition, and or identical or which is marked in different time units, and this is why perception of difference is possible.
Yes.
So I think that's correct.
Thank you very much for your talk. In the commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita written by Bhaktivinoda Swami, who follows on from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says that 100 days of Brahma equals his lifetime. So that's the basic unit of time, which is also in the section of the Bhagavad Purana where they go from atomic time to sort of the greatest cosmic scale of time. And if I remember correctly, it's given as Brahma's life is 311 trillion 40 million years. But it's very interesting because there are correlations between the sort of larger and smaller areas of time, in that, for instance, when Chaitanya is in Puri, he visits Haridasa Thakur, who's the Acharya of the Holy Name, every day at noon. And so Haridasa is understood to be the incarnation of Lord Brahma, and Krishna visits the material world, supposedly, at what works out to be approximately 12 noon in the day of Brahma. So then there's that direct correlation that Chaitanya is visiting Haridasa at 12 noon as well.
Yeah, and if I would have 40-50 minutes more, which I didn't want to have, then the next step would be to say, okay, how is this model of time units in a way put into practice in the religious community? And then you have exactly this time, special time or special kind of time units, these 8 praharas, yeah, these watches, to speak in ancient European language, where you then have the chance to insert yourself, for example, in the Ashtakaliya Smarana technique, which is a technique of meditation in which you try to connect your own meditation to what is at that time of your meditation going on in Krishna's heaven, yeah, in this play which is going on there. And so you have time and again, you have these techniques, yeah, to put yourself to enact these transitions from your daily life in Puri in the middle of noon. Yeah, you can connect yourself to what is going on at noon time in Krishna's world or in other parts of the cosmos. Yeah, so you have then, as a consequence of this model, you have actual religious practice in which, according to your skills, you are able to move to another sphere temporarily. Yeah? And so this is all, in a way, very concise. Yeah? And to this 100 days of Brahma, of course, the number 100 in the Indian context is this kind of infinite completeness. Yeah, it points not actually to 100,
yeah,
and then you sit down, and calculate. But I would say the 100 days, especially in the Brahma Bhagavata Purana, in the Bhagavata Purana, point to this kind of perfected time. Yeah, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita text, we have time and again this infinite. Yeah, this stress that because it's infinite, it's not counted. Yeah? And it's not counted because it's infinite. Yeah? This means all the other days of Brahma, if there are 100 or whatever, the day of Brahma marks the limit of any counting. And this is why it is of no interest, actually, to know what is happening in other days of Brahma. And I don't know of any text, but I would be happy to see such a text where we say, now we are in the 5th day of Brahma. Yeah, I don't know of any text which would argue like this. Yeah, so I would, although of these 300 trillion years, I would still stay with this argument of the infinite number of the Brahma days. Yeah.
Just a question about the avatars, because it seems like in the, if I remember well, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there are different levels of avatars. There's a Manvantaras and the Yuga avatars and so many different, and then as you mentioned there is this unique occurrence, this Vayu Rupa, the original divinity that comes once in a day of Brahma, and it's totally unique. Is there any, because you were mentioning that this, you were speaking about this unique occurrence, but have you some comments about the fact that even the avatar appearance is stratified?
This in a way would support the argument of uniqueness. Yeah, this point that an avatar never appears twice. Yeah, that you have this elaborate scheme of different partial avatar, amsha avataras, and then you have complete avataras. And actually, this could all be inserted into a specific time units too. So this would be, in a way, support my argument of the uniqueness. And I think it is especially remarkable that this that the incarnation of Krishna as Krishna, yeah, where you ask yourself who is Krishna, where Krishna is the Krishna, is the one, basic avatar at which all the others are directed and measured against.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chaitanya, in a way, comes very close to this, as he is also regarded to be a complete, a sampurna avatara. And but he is dated in a different time, and this marks the distinction apart from the other theological setup, which goes along with him. You know, this double incarnation. You know.
I enjoyed that.
Thanks.
One little observation. Wheels may progress across the surface of the earth when they're attached to a chariot or something, but they can also just rotate on the top of a pole, for instance, in a hook-swinging ceremony. So I think one needs to sort of have in mind the two possibilities for a wheel.
Yeah.
When I was... interested in time from an anthropological point of view, it always seemed to me that discussions were grossly oversimplified in the sort of assumption that all time was one thing, where it seems to me that in the real world we need to distinguish between time which does recur, like the daily cycle, the monthly cycle of the moon, the annual cycle with solstices, and time for which there is no physical basis, for whose recurrence there is no physical basis. That's one distinction, but then one also ought to distinguish, I think, between those two sorts of time and genealogical time. And after all, India is full of bards who will recite long genealogies, which involves a concept of time, which is usually not cyclical, I think. It's just one person after another. So I'm a little unhappy with the very notion of time, but I think that just reinforces your general point that Eliade is oversimplifying a lot of issues.
Yeah, indeed, and this has resulted in the case of Indian culture in labeling a whole culture with this one concept. And maybe I'm allowed to make some advertisement. I'm actually publishing just a volume on different notions of time in which the essays will actually cover all these different settings. Also, a lot of many anthropologists have contributed to this volume, and it deals with ritual time, with historical time in the Indian context, in order to make really clear that when and I think as an anthropologist you have some sympathy to say we are not dealing with time but with culturally constructed temporal frameworks or social time, and then you have different philosophies or practices going along with this. And especially the genealogy, this was another point which is in the paper, but I didn't read it out, that of course before Chaitanya actually is born, we have a huge genealogy narrated, and he says, oh no, I cannot be born because first my parents and my guru have to be born. Yeah, and so the genealogy, according to the principle of seniority, the Indian is everything is put in place and followed. Yeah, so it's all there. And I think a lot of research, especially by Romila Thapar, has been done on this connection between cosmic and dynastic and genealogical time. She has written some very nice articles about this combination of these two levels in Puranic literature. And yes, thanks. Of course, I had the chariot in mind, and also in the Vedic texts, which I just described, the wheel of time of 700, I think, 62 spokes. It's attached to a chariot of the sun god. And I was also thinking about the discus, the disc, which is also one other image. And so I think my main point was to draw the attention to the multi-layered setup, which we do not only find scattered in different Indians, but in one Hindu religious tradition, that we have different levels and notions of time.
Absolutely.
And so this was just, in a way, the point, a very simple one, but still one has to argue it. Wanted to make.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. I think we should stop, unless anyone goes who wishes to go, but do stay behind and carry on talking to Dr. Vandiyar if you so wish. So thank you for coming all this way to give us
okay.
a very interesting
thank
talk.
You
thank you.
I was wondering if the recurrence idea, if it was anticipation of the future as much as recapitulation of the